Today on Annenberg Radio News.
You know, nobody asks what my kids do, but they're all successful and they grew up here and in LAUSD. I get tired of the negative. Like, that's all we are.
The facts and fiction of urban life in South Los Angeles come to light. The Los Angeles area is about to lose another healthcare facility. The Community Mission Hospital in Huntington Park is closing its Mission campus. Ryan McAllister reports.
Elected officials, union representatives, and healthcare workers voiced their concerns today over the upcoming closure of a Huntington Park hospital. Community and Mission Hospital plans to close its pediatric and labor delivery units permanently tomorrow. More than 100 employees are expected to be laid off or transferred. Hospital worker Gilbert Zamora is concerned for the well-being of Mission's patients.
There's a lot of asthmatic kids, and also with the delivering mothers. A lot of people don't have transportation, and there's just no way for them to get from point A here to St. Francis, which will most likely be the nearest facility for them to be taken care of.
The hospital is owned by Edward Rubin. He bought it from Tenet Healthcare in 2006. Dr. Shahira Malik has been a pediatrics physician at the hospital for more than 25 years. She had strong words for Rubin.
Well, we actually told him you deceived the community, the medical staff, and the hospital employees, because you pledged that you will keep the facility open at the same level of care.
Mission Hospital provides healthcare services to one of Los Angeles's most densely populated areas. Many of the hospital's low-income patients will have to go miles to find another facility to meet their families' needs. Ryan McAllister, Annenberg Radio News.
The Los Angeles City Attorney's Office filed criminal charges against two companies that allegedly imported and distributed toxic Chinese toothpaste. Vernon Sales, Inc. and Selective Imports Corporation sold more than 70,000 tubes of toothpaste that contained a chemical used in antifreeze. The toothpaste was distributed between December 2005 and May 2007. A landslide closed busy streets near Sepulveda Boulevard today. The hillside collapse is close to the UCLA campus. It knocked down a power pole, and the retaining wall of a nearby home was pushed onto the street. Fire department spokesman Brian Humphrey says there was water in the area that may have soaked the hillside and caused the collapse. California parents who don't have teaching credentials can't homeschool their kids anymore. That's the ruling from the Second District Court of Appeals. The court says parents do not have a constitutional right to homeschool their children, and that noncompliance could lead to criminal charges. The California Homeschool Network's Lauren Mavromati says their decision overlooks the fact that private schools do not require credentialed teachers.
You don't need a teaching credential in any private schools in California. So many homeschoolers fall under the private school category. If we're going to fall under the private school category, then private school rules apply to us, and we wouldn't need credentials, or they need to require credentials for all private school teachers, and I think you're going to hear some outcry from the big private schools if that should happen.
An estimated 166,000 students in California are homeschooled. The family at the center of the case says it will appeal to the state Supreme Court. The State Department of Education is reviewing the decision. New schools are springing up all over the place in Los Angeles, and Matt Mundy has the latest.
Though its completion is still 2 years away, a groundbreaking ceremony for a new school in South LA had local students and parents excited earlier today. The school is part of an ambitious project by the Los Angeles Unified School District to help end involuntary busing and reduce overcrowding. For LAUSD Community Outreach Director Lorena Padilla-Melendez, these new schools are much needed.
We know that for too long our communities have been waiting for schools, and LAUSD is delivering the promise. We are building new schools, we are repairing our old schools, and all of that thanks to all of you in the community.
LAUSD has completed 69 new schools out of a planned 132. Matt Mundy, Annenberg Radio News.
The temperature tonight should be about 50 degrees with partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow it'll be around 77 and sunny. On Saturday, it should be around 72 and partly cloudy. Later on Annenberg Radio News, gang-related shootings in South Los Angeles have put police and residents on high alert as the citywide homicide rate keeps climbing. A recently released memoir depicting gang life in South Central Los Angeles has stirred up controversy in the African American community. Reporter Sonata Lee has the story.
This week, it was revealed that Margaret Seltzer's critically acclaimed memoir, Love and Consequences, was a complete fabrication. Seltzer, writing under the pseudonym Margaret Jones, wrote about life as the foster child of an African American family in South Central. She described South Central as a gang-ridden community where she ran drugs for the Bloods. President of the Los Angeles Urban League, Earl Ofari Hutchinson, says that books like Seltzer's damages the community's image and reinforces stereotypes.
They lie, they distort, they stereotype, and because of that, it reinforces in the public's mind the worst of the worst, especially about young black males. They pimp these communities, they pimp our life, they pimp our stories, and in the process of pimping and distorting that, they do a huge disservice to our community.
Linda Burroughs has lived in West Adams for 30 years. She found the book insulting and unbelievable.
I found the book very offensive, hard to believe. She says that she uses K instead of C, not because she's dumb, but because that's how we in South Central speak. So I would say it's crap with a K.
Burroughs raised 4 sons in South Central. She says that her sons have grown up to be successful young men, but the success stories in South Central rarely garner attention.
We're always presented in such a negative way. Nobody ever talks about the positives that our kids do. No one ever talks about that.
Earl Hutchinson places part of the blame for fake memoirs on the publishing industry. He says that more needs to be done to prevent phony stories depicting life in the inner city from reaching bookshelves.
There needs to be a code of ethics in that industry where they scrutinize everything to make sure they have their facts, they make sure that they are accurate, they make sure that they are not distorting events for profit. So that's the challenge to the publishing industry.
Jay Harris, the Wallace Annenberg Chair in Journalism and Democracy at USC, does not believe a code of conduct will help the publishing industry. He says the problem lies deeper.
A lack of integrity, frequently put in ambition and self-interest ahead of the common good, the broad public interest, and the selflessness.
In a statement to Annenberg Radio News, Marilyn Duxworth, a representative of Riverhead Books, said that Seltzer provided evidence, such as photographs and letters, to support her story. And Seltzer introduced her book agent to people who represented themselves as Seltzer's foster siblings. The memoir is being pulled from bookstores, and Riverhead Books is offering refunds to book buyers. Sonata Lee, Annenberg Radio News.
Earlier today, I spoke with award-winning novelist T.C. Boyle about the fake memoir.
Last week, a Holocaust memoir was deemed to have fake information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then this week, Margaret Seltzer's Love and Consequence was fake as well. What do you think of the recent discovery that both of these memoirs were actually fiction?
I think it speaks to a problem in the publishing world. Fiction has a power that memoir does not have. Memoir is limited to what happened to somebody. There was just a kind of cachet with memoirs for the last 10 years or so, and people felt it's like reality TV, they're getting something real. And so these authors have fudged it. I think that fiction, represented as fiction, has tremendous power. So I think it's a question of labeling and a kind of illness of the publishing industry where fiction seems to be taking a second seat to memoir. Maybe that will change now.
What do you think this says about the relationship between perception and reality? More specifically, are people so hungry for these stories that they're willing to accept more fabricated ones?
The memoirs, again, of the past decade or so, seem to be competing with one another to show how degraded and horrible this person's life was, but then they've risen above it, and it's a great story for us all, and so on and so on. Okay, fine. I still, as a fiction writer, consider the power of fiction to be infinitely beyond that as an art form.
What do you think this says about the perceptions of urban life in the eyes of others?
I presume it is playing to the expectations and prejudices of the audience. I would guess that the people who are authentic and who know about the actual gangs involved would probably find it kind of plastic.
And why can't people focus on what's really happening rather than make it up?
Every writer is different and has his or her own perspective, which is why we're all unique, and it makes reading literature, whether it's a memoir or a novel or poetry or essay, so great, because there's an individual voice and individual perspective.
There's a professional betrayal between the author and her editors, but also a personal betrayal to the truth when you're trying to pass off something that isn't in fact true.
My first thought on reading yesterday's news was to feel for the woman and how humiliated she must be, not to mention the lawsuits that are going to follow in her wake and the fact that she'll probably not be able to publish after this. Unless she publishes a memoir about the ersatz memoir. That'll probably sell a million. She'll be on Oprah, you know?
Now back to our top story. South Los Angeles residents and activists are anxious after a spree of gang-related shootings. David DeSola has the story.
It's been a violent week in Los Angeles. A series of gun and gang-related crimes have drawn the attention of city officials and the media. 6-year-old LaVaria Elvey was shot in the head on Tuesday while riding in his family's car in Harbor Gateway. 2 days earlier, 17-year-old Jameel Shaw was shot and killed outside of his home. Both cases involved African-American boys targeted by men believed to be Latino gang members. All of this comes amid a slight increase in homicides, according to statistics from the Los Angeles Police Department. LV family spokesman Eddie Jones called for an increased police presence on the streets.
We need officers riding bikes. We need officers walking. We need officers 24 hours a day. Wherever there is a gang or a gang street or a gang neighborhood, we need police cars sitting there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Gang expert Alex Alonzo says any talk of a trend is premature.
It's just too early in the year to see if this is just an uptick or if there's going to be a trend. By the time you get to June 30th and you compare those numbers, year-to-date numbers, with 2007, then you'll be able to make a better determination if it was just an uptick in the late February, early March, or if 2008 is on a different trend.
Alonzo says that tensions between Latino and African-American gangs go back several years, but notes that homicides within the same race are far more common.
I don't necessarily think that these shootings are an indication of increasing crime and violence in Los Angeles, because there have been way more victims of black-on-black and Hispanic-on-Hispanic murders.
The Los Angeles Police Department says there have been 67 homicides so far this year. That's an increase of 13 from the same time in 2007. David DeSola, Annenberg Radio News.
The increase in shootings and murders in South L.A. has residents talking. Just how safe do South L.A. residents feel? ARN reporter Brian Sika found out.
I don't really feel that safe.
Well, I feel pretty safe, but I'm very cautious.
I don't have any problems.
I'm sort of weary watching to make sure situations look safe.
You know what? Depends what neighborhoods. I do, but I mean, it is dangerous out there.
I do.
I kind of feel safe about it, kind of.
I feel safe. I live in South Central. And I've been living there for 25 years.
Yeah, I feel safe.
No, I really don't feel safe at all. I think it's very dangerous around here.
I can truly say, not really, because security, when they need to be watching, they're not watching.
I think it just boils down to being aware of your surroundings, because we live in a big city and it's kind of a natural part of the environment. If you're in a place where you fear that you might be harmed, I mean, you just have an increased awareness about you.
Now we check in with Jessica Janner to find out what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. Trojan Vision. How are you today, Jessica?
Hi, good, thanks. Hi, Courtney. Well, today we'll have a story on the mayor's new plan to make two of LA's busiest streets, Olympic and Pico, virtually one way. And we'll have that story for you. Remember, you can watch us live on Trojan Vision tonight at 6 or anytime on the web at atvn.org.
That's it for this Thursday, March 6th, 2008. For all of us at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Courtney Cabot.